The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 615, a very special Death Stranding impressions episode.
Death Stranding!
That's how the game maybe started.
Were we all supposed to do that?
Don't worry. You missed the memo. My name is Jonathan Dornbush. I am your host for this week, as I have been for a couple weeks now. And we are here to tell you our spoiler-free impressions of Death Stranding through Chapter 3. We are not going to spoil anything major story-wise for you. We're not going to talk about anything in the game beyond that point. Of course, Death Stranding doesn't come out for the PS4 until November 8th, so we don't want to ruin that experience for those looking forward to playing it. But I am joined this week by Brian Altano.
Hello.
Max Scoville.
Death Stranding.
And Mark Medina.
Seth Stranding.
What? He's stranded in Maine.
The star of his game.
You spoiled his name.
Sorry, guys.
That's in Chapter 12. No, I did want to say before we begin, of course, none of us at this table reviewed this game. Tristan Ogilvy, I believe, from our Australian team, reviewed this game. He gave it a 6.8, which is okay.
It's a very okay game.
Okay, 0.8 on the IGN scale. I would absolutely recommend you go check out his review. The video review is roughly about 10 minutes long, but it is one of the most entertaining, well-produced reviews we've ever done.
The video review is incredibly good.
You've gone and upset the baby.
I know.
It's my favorite part.
It's a fantastic review, whether or not we all agree or disagree with the points that Tristan made. We'll get into some of that. It is well worth reading and watching that review. He makes his points very well. He argues his case about how he felt about this game very well.
A little hack for people who are watching at home. Yeah. If the 6.8 review score upsets you, a cool trick is to just pretend that's not there and then read the review and make up your own score based on those words.
Perfect. Just don't scroll down to the score number and then you can do that. So I did want to start off the fact that, you know, Tristan scored this a 6.8. I wanted to talk about the general tenor and not necessarily speak for all of our coworkers, but just about the general discussion we've been having as people have been playing this game in the office. It's been, to me, one of the most fascinating game review periods to watch happen at IGN since I've been here, because there are, I feel like, so many different perspectives across the board. There are people, and we'll get into this, some people really found the first few hours to be a slog. Some people enjoyed the first few hours. Some people thought it got better. Some people didn't. There's so much to the way that people feel about this game. I haven't seen this before. How do you guys feel about this?
If there were two of me, we would be arguing.
I'll start by saying that I think it is monumental that a company like Sony was able to allocate a significant number of resources towards something this sort of weird and disparate and broken into so many different fan bases before the game is even out there. I value that. I love that. I wish there was more experimentation and art house nonsensory in the AAA space. I'm so glad that's here. I think it's a huge, I would say, sigh of relief that this is actually out now, or like there or close in the wild, and something that we've been, you know, tracking for 3 years is now something we can almost openly talk about.
Yeah, I went on the website earlier and I was like, Death Stranding review, and I was like, Oh yeah,
it feels surreal.
That's weird.
Having done this job as long as we all have, like, to be able to sit there and go, oh yeah, like it's almost here. Like it's real. Like you can go buy it very soon. Reviews are out. People have finished it. It is a shipped, completed, finished product. It is in the wheelhouse of incredible, sort of weird, bizarre, cinematic, monumental things that Sony have shipped this generation. I'm very, very happy that it exists and it's here. And the air is out now. The cat's out of the bag. We can talk about it.
And Tristan does a great job of addressing all of that in his review, because this is a game. I think this is probably the game I can remember in recent memory that comes with the most saddled expectations, whether positive or negative, from fans and creators and just the industry in general. People just have wanted to know for years, what is Death Stranding? Mm-hmm. And as Tristan says in his review, and I totally agree with him on this, it's complicated. There's no easy answer to what Death Stranding is from minute one to minute, 100.
Which makes it really hard when people say, hey, am I going to like this game? You're like,
Well, what do you
tell
like?
Me? What yeah, tell me yeah. about yourself?
Yeah. as taken as the hobby that one of your friends took on after a very violently public breakup.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fascinating piece of art. As taken as a video game that we file next to all the other video games on the shelf, which is how shelves work. This is a much more complicated piece of art. So yeah.
It's hard to get into, obviously, without spoiling too much. We will stay away from major story spoilers, but we will talk a little bit about what those opening chapters do involve gameplay-wise and story-wise to a certain extent, because both aspects really matter to this game.
Yeah.
But I think, as Tristan does in his review, one of the things to address is, what is Death Stranding? And now we have a sense of that. And so in those opening hours, you are playing as Norman Reedus' Sam Porter Bridges. Mm-hmm. You are sent out on your quest to reconnect America. By going to many various different points along the map, reconnecting different people who have different viewpoints about whether or not they want to be connected. And you do that by walking.
Walking. You walk there.
And you're carrying packages.
You're a mailman.
It is a postman.
It is the Kevin Costner movie, The Postman.
Yeah.
Or a guy who is reconnecting a shattered country by delivering mail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that walking simulator is and we've said this for a long time, a very reductive way to look at this game. Hiking simulator.
The thing is,
I think a lot more where we should be going with this.
Walking simulator is such a weird term to apply to this game, because when you think walking simulator, you think like What Remains of Edith Finch or Gone Home or stuff like that.
You never fall going up the steps in Gone Home.
Right. And it's like those games are
push back.
Those games are like you're walking through a story. That's not what Death Stranding is. There is gameplay in the moment to moment of walking from one thing to another. It's not literally just walking.
It's a
hiking simulator.
Well, it makes that walking and that hiking intentionally laborious.
Yeah. Sometimes ghosts show up.
Also, sometimes ghosts show up. Yeah. So I do want to talk about. There's a lot to parse in this, even in those first few hours. So let's talk about first the actual act of getting Sam Porter Bridges from one place to the next.
Sure.
In the beginning of that game, that is largely done on foot. Obviously, we've seen vehicles introduced in trailers and everything.
They tease you with a vehicle right at the start. They're like, hey, here's a motorcycle.
But you can't ride it.
Cannot ride it.
So walking, and I think this is a bit of a make or break moment for a lot of people with this game in those beginning sections, because most of your missions are, hey, carry some of this material or this equipment or this whatever to this other point, and then you plot your point. And then you go.
Yeah.
How did you all feel about those first few missions where you are trying to figure out, one, how to make sure Sam doesn't fall over and your pack doesn't fall? But what did you all make of those like first few introductory missions?
They're very early, pretty much the first thing you do is you're carrying something that's too heavy for you.
Yeah.
And so it's a big, long trek of him constantly kind of. But I feel like that's kind of put there to make the rest of it seem not so bad, because once you're done with that, then it's like, here's a couple boxes. And you're like, oh, okay, this isn't too bad. I really liked the opening, and I was like, I don't mind this whole like walking thing we're doing. And then it was one of those things where it was like, okay, now I'm sick of this walking thing. And then they were like, here's an upgrade to make it a little bit better. And that's kind of what the first, like, I don't know, I'd say 5 hours are, is like, I'm sick of how this is. And they're like, okay, here's a way to make it not so bad.
I would say the pacing is, like, people you know, have and will complain about the pacing mm-hmm. the same way that they mm-hmm. complain about it in The Phantom Pain.
Sure.
I would say it's very similar. And then it's like, that was the last one was the one where you had to learn how to walk before you could literally run.
Right.
This time around, it's kind of like, well, let's just get you walking.
Yeah.
Let's get you walking up hills.
They get you out there.
You're going to beat a lot of that. And then you get like, I don't know, you do upgrade your things and you do start mm-hmm. getting, you know, little tidbits kind of sprinkled out there. But
yeah, so in terms of like very traditional Metal Gear parallels, especially with Phantom Pain, I don't think there's a ton of them here, but I do think the pacing is definitely on a par for the course for mm-hmm. sort of traditional Kojima fare, where you're like getting your bearings. But there's also like this tendency to make it feel sort of like an abusive relationship where you're like, I hate this. And they're like, well, we made it a little bit better for you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was texting.
Maybe why are you crying? And you're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, this makes things a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of that in the first few hours. And I think like it's been weird talking to people in the office. And again, like interesting art, like it's all over the place. Some people are like, I love the first 10 hours. You know, mm-hmm. Jonathan, you were like pretty strong on it.
We've talked about this a lot. And I will say one thing about the pacing. So I've never played a Kojima game in any demonstrable way. I've played maybe like 2 or 3 hours of the first Metal Gear Solid, and that's it, except for PT. The pacing is weird in the beginning of this game because it is so much more cutscene heavy at the beginning.
Yeah.
But in terms of like when you're getting used to the gameplay, it never bothered me. Like the baby crying, that's something you've brought up and a few other people in the office have brought up. I can barely remember the baby crying. Like that to me has never been an issue to my gameplay habit.
You're a better parent than Brian.
Definitely true.
Does have a child.
Whether or not Death Stranding may be a better parent. We'll see. Yeah, sure. We'll see what happens.
Let's see how much it cries then.
I mean, look, I take care of a dog and it's basically the same thing.
It's basically the same.
But no, I think
have for a gecko. Me,
the beginning few hours to me, I didn't know what to go in expecting for this game. And so in the first few hours, like, just make sure you can get over that hill.
Right.
The first couple mm-hmm. times Sam fell, I was like, why? Why is he falling like this? Like, why is that? And then something just clicked in my brain where I went, oh, that's the gameplay right now. The gameplay mm-hmm. is this journey getting from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, just that thought that I had then made it go, okay, I'm just going to sit back and try to find the smoothest path forward.
That's a really good point. And honestly, it's something that we should like totally stress right now.
Yeah.
Most open world games are essentially about getting to a conflict and mm-hmm. finding resolution for it. Whereas here in this game, the conflict is the journey to whatever the resolution is. You're almost constantly in the first 10 hours babysitting the trigger buttons and your own body weight. And I've seen some people respond to our footage in our video review of like, oh, just wear less boxes, like just carry less stuff.
Like it's so easy.
Yeah, but exactly. And the thing is, like, the game actually mandates through its mission structure many, many times throughout its entire duration to carry as much as possible, right?
And yeah, someone just asked me, can you make 2 trips? And I'm like, well, I wouldn't want to do that because a trip can take like 20 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
But then I was like, no, because if they require their whole delivery, they're not going to be on the network.
You
can, so there's,
you can,
will they have a locker there?
You can do partial deliveries.
Oh,
you
some missions have
But that's the thing is, we're so ingrained to take, like, I've said this a few times, but it's like when you're unloading groceries from the car.
Yeah,
I don't want to make 2 trips.
Yeah. I've been training for this game my whole life.
Yeah, you Death Stranding all of the milk and eggs up the stairs and get in the house, and then you dump them all on the kitchen counter, and it's a big whole theatrical thing. And you could have made 2 trips, but you don't do that.
I mean, that's the interesting thing to me about this game is I think it very intentionally is pushing back against what we're used to doing in a game.
Right.
And whether or not you find that fun, I think is the like breaking point a lot of us have and how we're feeling differently about it.
Yeah, no, but
it's very intentional.
I moved with a newborn. Two separate apartments in January, and like I was not expecting to revisit.
Have to do that in a game.
Like a lot of like the positives and negatives of that experience in a video game. But then again, here we are. But I really do want to stress that like that is actually a lot of the bulk of this game.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's inherently a terrible tragic thing. Like I do think there is some sort of like cathartic rewarding feeling that comes with getting that done. Like delivering something and having somebody on the receiving end of that delivery be happy and also completely disillusion to the entire process and hell that you went through to get there is sort of like interestingly, wonderfully cathartic. I found that kind of like...
You stole exactly what I was going to say. Like, what's worked for me in this game and why I keep coming back every day to keep playing for hours every night is that loop in a cathartic way. Like, it is this... It's a calm, meditative game, which I don't think... I don't know if a lot of us were expecting that.
No, it is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Yes, yeah.
Literally.
It is
both of those things.
Yes, no, absolutely. And it is this wonderful process for me where every night I go and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to get from here to there, but I'll stop at all these places along the way and bring them what I can and find the best route available to make multiple deliveries.
Yeah, because you find like cargo kind of just like thrown about.
You find
and you're
things
like,
scattered.
Hey, I'm headed that way.
I'll grab that.
Put it on there.
And the rewarding nature of getting to someone and they say, great job. I needed this so much.
Yeah,
and then they give you
that
likes.
Positive. Yeah.
It's all based on a positive feedback loop. It works in my brain really well.
Yeah, there are no downvotes in this universe.
Yes. Yeah.
It's dystopian Animal Crossing. But I think the thing is that, like,
I was going to say open world Tetris. But
yeah. that too. But I do think that, like, calling it simply this sort of like sublime catharsis is sort of undermining the frustrating parts a lot.
Sure.
Because I do think it pushes back a lot more than the average, like, sort of meandering, therapeutic, like, incense candle would.
For sure.
Like, the idea of something that's just sort of there to exist, to be like, relax and just bring people things and make the world a better place. That's not entirely the case here. There's a lot of falling, a lot of screaming. Babies crying is antithetical to, I think, sleep, like literally by design. like there's a lot here that makes you go, oh, shit. Like
this. I think for me, the difference there, though, is that I find those moments fun. Mm. Like there is an enjoyment that I derive from getting to a point on a cliff or a turn on a hill and being like, oh no, how do I figure this out? Like there's something that there, even if Sam stumbles, getting back up and being like, oh, I could have gone that way. I'll go back that time.
Yeah.
That's what works for me.
It gamifies your own stubbornness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like one of the biggest hurdles in this game is how you approach it. And I think that I was surprised at how easy it was for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of things I was expecting, I don't know, combat, and I was expecting it like to kill me more, I guess, because it's got death in the title, but that wasn't so much the issue. It was more like, how are you going to walk up this hill? And I'd be like, I would catch myself being like, I'm going to go up this hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And falling down repeatedly and being like, okay, this hill is not working. I guess I'm taking the scenic route.
Well, I mean, if you look at something like Red Dead, which killed you every time you like went diagonal from like the main path in a story, this is very different than that. Like, this is not a game that murders you constantly and punishes you. This is a game that tells you, like, it almost like evokes and pushes towards toxic masculinity and then tells you that you're an idiot for succumbing to that. Like, it's a lot of, like, you know, big, brash sports dads being
hell
like,
no, I'm not stopping and asking for directions.
I'll do it myself.
I'm not going around this mountain. I'm going over it.
Yeah. it's like, how many boxes can you lift up the stairs while being a big, dumb man and then dropping three or four of them, breaking a bunch of plates?
I was going to say, like, one of the biggest differences is in, like, Red Dead, you say, okay, I'm here and I want to go here. You put your marker there, and then the game literally says, cool, take these roads. Follow this path.
Yeah.
This is the safest way to get there, where Death Stranding doesn't do anything like that. You make a marker, and it's up to you to tilt the map and stuff like that and kind of see, okay, I'm going to go here. And then you make another marker, and you're like, I'm going to go around this, and I'm going to go. You plot paths. Sometimes that's not always the best, and you want to follow that line that you've made for yourself.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, the map was wrong.
Yeah.
There's a cliff there.
Yeah. I love how, like, the fastest point between two points is a straight line in theory, but, you know, when it's terrain, not so much. And, like, we're so used to games either making it so you just draw a straight line and you walk towards that thing and you Skyrim your dumb horse up the side of a hill.
Yeah.
Or it's Red Dead and it's like, here's the map quest route, you know.
Exactly.
Turn left in 500.
Take a
left.
And Breath of the Wild did that really well, too, right?
Yeah.
Where you would draw a straight line, you'd get there and you'd be like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm too tired to climb this mountain, you know?
Yeah.
Have you tried having stew, though? Because that'll really perk you up. But no, like, in this case,
what about Monster Energy?
Yeah. Monster Energy, again, weird addition, but okay. One of the few things to survive the Death Stranding.
It sure did.
But, like, the thing the game doesn't tell you is like, oh yeah, topography is a major part of this. And you also have to learn the terrain. And like, you have to, there is a way to tilt the controller to see the map sideways. And you'll be like, this looks like an easy enough route. You're like, I'm just going to go like this. And then you tilt it and you're like, oh, that's, no, that's a wall. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go much more around the way here, you know?
Yeah, never in a game have I been more terrified, like, at the beginning, like coming up over a hill and seeing, like, a somewhat steep, kind of rocky, and I'm like, oh, boy, here we go.
How's he going to walk down that?
Grab the triggers, and you're like, taking it easy.
See, I actually, and this is weird, because this game is rooted in the Decima engine, which is, you know, the darling of Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a masterfully built, gorgeous, diverse open world game where climbing up mountains sucks.
Climbing is bad
in that game. And it was funny because we all played that game within a 2-week window of something like Breath of the Wild, where climbing was, you know, paramount to conquering the universe there. But Death Stranding grabs a lot of the weirdest and worst and most broken elements, I would say, of something like Horizon, where you're just sort of like shimmying up a mountain face or falling down
it's
a rock.
It's called Skyrimming. Okay?
Yeah, Skyrimming. It's a good way of putting it. And a lot of that is sort of weaponized in this game to be part of the parkour. And I kind of hate that and appreciate that. This is an incredibly polished game that also feels ridiculously broken and janky at times as you're sort of shimmying down a mountain or falling or like holding both triggers at the same time, the full-on speed run. And sometimes, just like real life, running down a mountain will make you look like an amazing man. Other times you'll fall flat in your face.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also like trip over like very rudimentary sort of architecture in the ground, like a rock.
It'll come out of nowhere. You're just like, dude, and he's like, oh, yeah. And you're like, no, what are you doing?
You're like, what did you do? And then within that comes the sort of realization that, like, if you land on your chest, your baby starts screaming, gets full of black ink or whatever all that's called. And then it turns into this whole big thing. And then you're now, like, cleaning up the parts of a failed or almost failed mission delivery.
Like, this is my fault.
Yeah. And so
this game sucks to rush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I rushed this game, and I think I had a worse experience because of it.
Yeah, we've talked about that a bit. I've been taking it a little slow after I realized I was so far behind everyone who was finishing it. I was like, okay, I'm just going to completely not care about the pace I'm going and just do what
most take time to bring ladders, climbing anchors, build bridges, pave roads, and you'll have a better time.
Whether it ends up being a game for you or not, I do think taking the slow time with it. And I do want to clarify, that is not a thing that Tristan did not rush through this game.
No, he played it
extensively. He took his time. He really went through this, and his review, I think, shows what that time he put into it, like what it meant for him.
No, we were like genuinely given ample time to
really
experience this game, and I appreciate it for that, because I got to put like 25-30 hours in before I was like, okay, I'm not necessarily sure if I want to keep going.
Yeah.
But I do think that like a lot of this, we're talking about the parts of this game that we've discovered over the last 3 weeks. Like, the parts of this game that have been quantifiably known over the last 3 years have been a lot more story-based and narrative and cinematic-driven. And that stuff is all there. And I feel like that stuff is, like, kind of not really as big as we thought it would be.
I mean, I've fooled me once, you know, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, whatever. Kojima, he did his usual thing where I feel like there's a lot of stuff he's shown since day one where you're like,
yeah,
I wish I'd watched less trailers, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw a glimpse of I'd seen a good deal of this game by the time the final trailer came out, and I was like, well, I'm really glad I'd seen a good deal of this game, because that also showed a good deal of the game. and some people don't mind that, but I'm very much in the sense where, like, if I haven't seen something before, and then I see it in promotional material, that kind of spoils something for me.
Sure.
Yeah, like, I feel like we're all tap dancing around like spoiler stuff right now, which is important for our audience. But at the same time, the auteur and marketing departments behind this game have been frivolously machine gunning spoiler stuff everywhere. And it's been very difficult to sort of parse what we can talk about, what they've shown already. I mean, they've straight up shown very late gamey stuff. And
don't read the ESRB rating, by the way.
No.
Yeah.
Don't read that. Just don't.
Yeah, don't. I mean, don't watch. This is so antithetical.
Like, we can't say. No. Like, don't. We can't say what trailer not to watch. Yeah. Because, which is strange, but. Let's go to something we can talk about that we have been avoiding a little bit. And Max, you touched on briefly the, and Mark, you said a little bit of this too, but like the terror in the game, like let's shift to the BTs a bit. Cause we can talk about some of those experiences.
Ghosty boys.
Ghost boys. Yes. Which we have been a large part of the marketing since the beginning of the game. Oh, it's not Nickelodeon. It's all good.
You're sitting between Max.
I know. I'm used to it. It's
he's good at this though.
You can't not call them Muddy Buddies. No, that's what they are.
So the MBs, as they're now known on Podcast Beyond, you do run into pretty early in the game for the first time. And I will say it was like a genuinely frightening experience for me. Because you're not sure how they're going to react to you.
Yeah, they've shown a bit on how they work.
Yeah.
I found myself slightly confused at first. I was like, wait, how do I get past these? Certain things that I thought should have been happening weren't happening. Like, I was like, okay, I've seen in trailers that, you know, he scans and they're around you. Why isn't that working for me? And it kind of, once I learned it though, then I was like, okay, this is fine. For the most part, I actually kind of found it like, I was like, you guys are in my way, unless it was a mission that specifically had you. Like, you'll get a mission where it's like, hey, here's this mall or whatever, and there's some BTs there, and I need you to collect my scattered cargo. So then the point at that point is to go there. What?
I love, like, the logic of this. It's like, hey, I lost something, but it's in a haunted house. Can you go get it for me? Mr. Mailman.
Sensing beat. And so it's like that's when it's like a video game, right? That's when it's like, okay, the point of this is to sneak around this, like, you know, kind of ruins and avoid these ghosty boys.
MBs.
All that. Yeah, exactly. Brandon Tyrells. And but when I was like, okay, I want to just do this quick side delivery, and I'm like, I'm going, and then it's like the game does this thing where it's like, even if you're on a motorcycle, it's like, you're like, meh, and then it's like, and it's like, zoop, your hood goes on, and I'm like, and then every time, then it's like, zooms in on your scanner, and it comes up, and it's like, and you're just like, oh.
I will say that the repetitiveness of
get
that
out of here.
Combination has driven me nuts. Like, there me are too. A lot of things I really, really love about this game. The fact that that has to happen the first time and then the 50th time.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's got to be an easier way to get you in.
After the first 100th time.
Tedium is a running theme in this game to the point where it's like when you're covered in mud and dirt and blood and all this other gunk, you go take a shower and there's four cutscenes you have to skip. Like, there's a lot of that, like, very sort of like...
But you can't skip them. That's the problem.
You can't.
You can for shower.
But shortly. But you
not
can't.
For the total.
And here's why. You 100. Yeah. No. You can skip a shower cutscene. You can, but you shouldn't. And the game teaches you very early that you shouldn't, because they add cutscenes to these menial things.
Yeah.
So then it became this thing where I watched Sam take a shower 50 times because I was terrified about skipping any of those cutscenes, and because I wanted to.
Of course. That's okay.
But anyways, I was terrified of skipping those cutscenes because you just never know when
something's
going to add on to it. So then I have footage of me watching him shower 50 times.
That's okay. That's okay.
I never skipped anything.
Start a channel.
It's you know how rare it is.
I think I'm just going to make an hour-long compilation.
Yeah. That's actually not a bad idea. Yeah. Put that up.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
Netflix does that for every
Sam
show. We should
showering.
Do that for every game.
Sam. 9 hours.
Sam
we should
showering
find that in every major
hours.
Game, whatever the most like soothing, repetitive thing is, we should just make an hour.
No, so that became a running thing with a lot of stuff, where it's like you are conditioned to go through the same rudimentary processes over and over, to the point where the cutscenes accompanied with those things become mundane,
mm-hmm.
and you start
mm-hmm.
skipping them, and then you get to important stuff, and you think it's just part of the grind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's the video for when you put a package on the conveyor belt, and it goes down the thing, and then this comes back, and you start skipping those things, and then you get into the stuff that actually matters, and you start like sort of intrinsically hitting the button to
like
skip.
I'm so used
too.
To skipping every time the game takes control.
Yeah, do you know that's antithetical to the storytelling.
You know how rare it is for me to play a game where at the end of the day it says like how many times you died, and that's like less than the number of cutscenes I skipped.
Yep.
Like I skipped a lot of cuts, not like story stuff, but like, again, delivering packages, getting in and out of the car, like taking a shower, going pee. Like there's all these things that I'm like, yes, that's a thing. You go pee or poop or shower.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bodily function in this. And it's very well, like, it's incredibly well realized. They mo-capped Norman Reedus pretending to drop a deuce. And
yeah, they did.
I don't need to see that every time.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't, you know.
There's a weird disconnect for me where, like, the tedium or the repetitiveness, I will say, because tedium implies bad. The repetitiveness of the, like, gameplay loop I enjoy. Like, that is a repetitiveness that works for me. But, yeah, there are odd accents to that, and the repetitiveness of the way this game accentuates its gameplay bothers me. When it comes to the cutscene repetitiveness, some of the back and forth with characters, like it bums me out that when you deliver packages, there's maybe two variations of what those characters say, because I could return packages to a character 50 times.
Yeah, this reeks. And they will say two. This reeks of a product that needed like somebody to really come in and be like, okay, so much of this works. And so much of this doesn't. Let's like sort of jam together the good stuff and the bad stuff here and make something interesting.
Well, I mean,
and also cut the fat.
It's got, like, I hate to say this, it's got a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
Like, literally, but also it's got the trappings of almost PT and the leftover bits from Metal Gear Solid.
Yep.
But it's not those games.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, if you took out the dramatic sort of, you know, BT entrance cutscenes and just made them like a sort of passive thing that you had to deal with, that would be a better game. Like, the fact that every time you come near Ghost, it goes, and then you're like, oh, I guess it's ghost avoiding time. Or I just gun it and go past it.
Which is what I ended up doing, yeah.
Sometimes in that moment, you can spend less time getting through a BT section than you can waiting to get into the BT section. Yeah,
yeah.
It's very weird.
Thing of having such a minimalist and sparse game in terms of conflict, in terms of action, is fine. But to take those things and throw so much like sort of weight and gravity onto them that they are supposed to feel significant and important, but they don't, is not. Mm-hmm. And so I got to a point where like BTs would show up and I'd be like, it was mostly just like an annoyance, you know?
Yep.
It's like not even like a flat tire when you're driving. It's just kind of just like this thing where you're like, it was like getting a text from somebody like when you're in a good mood.
Well, and then what I kept doing was if I was annoyed by him, I would just kind of try to rush through it.
Me too.
I'm like, let's just get through this.
Yeah.
Then you get caught.
Yeah.
Then you get pulled under.
Yeah.
And then you got to fight the catcher.
Yeah.
And like, those are the times where like my wife would be like, and I'd just be like, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, it reminds me of like Red Dead when it's like, I'm trying to get something done and I kind of stumble off a cliff and my horse breaks his leg. And I'm like, dude.
And it's just pushing back.
Yes.
And it's not fun.
And I'm just like, I'm trying to get through this. So instead of fighting him, I'm just like trying to get to the edge to get him to go away. And I'm just like,
ugh. This was the first time in this whole show I brought up the word fun, right? Because I don't think it's like something that really works.
Can art be fun?
Yeah.
Right. Should it?
Like, I don't want to like chastise something for not being fun. But I do think that there is the opposite of that. Like, I don't think all art needs to be fun. I don't think all video games need to be fun. I think they can be interesting and live off of that and thrive. But I do think that like pushing back so hard is antithetical to the entire ideology of Kojima as a sort of cinematic auteur. Like, movies exist and they happen, and video games kick your ass and push you away. And I'm not asking for a baby mode, because I honestly think this is a pretty damn easy game.
Well, there is the cinematic mode.
Yeah, there actually is a baby mode.
It doesn't actually change a lot in terms of like the most cumbersome parts of this game.
I wonder what it does. I didn't think about that. What is changing the difficulty?
It makes combat
just make combat harder.
The confines of conflict, which happens, like we said, very rarely, a lot easier. But in terms of like the balancing act of like shuffling up the hill, or like the BTs popping out and stealing your packages, changes nothing in regards to that.
So, yeah, because the hardest parts of the game are sometimes just walking.
Like, it's not a mode for people who love Hannibal and scary stories to tell in the dark. And
no, it's also like cinema is a thing that's generally a movie is, you know, usually under 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
This game is not under 3 hours.
No.
There's no way you digest that story in under 3 hours, even on the easiest mode.
Yeah. Those first three chapters are not 3 hours.
Yeah. Nope,
they aren't. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
I think Metal Gear Solid 5 might be my favorite game ever. I've gone back and forth about that a whole lot. I recognize all of the things people don't like about it. I maintain that it is an unfinished masterpiece. When people say, I never finished that, I said, that's okay. Neither did Kojima. There's a lot of things wrong with that game that I'm like, man, it would have been cool if he'd gotten, you know, carte blanche to do what he wanted. This kind of feels like he was rebuilding that from the ground up, but that game has a lot more stuff in it. Like, there's a lot more things in there, and it was also refining a formula that he invented like 32 years prior.
This is a definitely much more sparse experience in a lot of ways, and I do want to talk about something that we haven't touched on yet that can add to it in a very different way, and it's something that I don't know if we can talk about fully until this game is out for a few months, and that's the social aspect of it.
Yeah,
right. So the whole game in-world and then with the multiplayer online aspect has a like currency. One of the things that survived the Death Stranding is the fact that you can give people a thumbs up and they have likes that they can spend. You as Sam can spend those likes on other people's structures, which sometimes are made by characters in the game and sometimes are made by random players online, or you can use those you accrue those likes to get certain star ratings and whatnot.
It's the stuff you see in the Souls games. Except instead of it being like, you know, the bloodborne fetus is coming out of the ground to tell you the important message of somersaults up ahead or bird bad or whatever, it's actually a thing you can use.
Yeah. And you have the ability with resources that you collect in the game to build some of these structures, and new structures get introduced as the game goes on. Some of the earliest ones are post boxes, which you can put into the world that let you or other players store their contents in there, both in your own locker and a shared locker with other players.
Generators
to help power your battery.
But then
me was like where the game started to click was like, I'm driving around in a truck or a motorcycle where the batteries would constantly die. Because there is that survival element to this game, which is like pretty malnourished if you actually think of the grand scheme of things. Like, it's not really about like, this character has to do this or he'll die, or this character. Your character doesn't really die from like not having enough nutrients or this and that, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't happen a lot. That said, your vehicles will, and vehicles are a great way to get around in the world, especially when you're like...
Your shoes will break.
Your shoes will get very tired and sad or whatever it is, wet. But like inching along and building generators and finding them in the wild and getting into a body of water and like clenching your fists and getting across it, only to find that like right down the stream is like a bridge. And crossing that a player left there, that's when things really start to get like pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough balance, because I could see that either getting in a way where you're like, that saved me, or that sort of relieving all of the, I would say, sort of Metroid-y isolation that the game sort of thrives on.
No, it's like Journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's that feeling of like, oh, strangers are helping me.
Right.
Yeah. I kind of felt like that too. I was like, oh, I need to get over this like thing, and there, somebody had already built a bridge there. I don't know who the god lore is,
right?
But man, you probably took
that guy's great.
I want 10-15 hours off this game for me.
Also, shout out to was it Yong Ye?
Oh yeah,
YouTuber,
yeah,
who is a hardcore Metal Gear YouTuber. Met this dude at a Metal Gear Survive. Sorry, I don't mean to bring that up, but nice dude. And it was really funny to be like, oh.
Yeah. They helped out so much.
There were definitely people I saw along the entire journey. And so then it became this thing where at first I was like, well, I would have liked to build that bridge. Like, what am I losing from that? And then I was like, should I just play this offline? Like, so that way I'm not being interrupted. And then you find out that stuff is there to just kind of help the mundaneness of, because if you didn't use it, then this game would be much longer. But then it became, this thing that's like, oh, we're all in this together. And like, you'd see people like the God Lord. I'm like, I feel like he was there every step of the way that I was. Cause I felt like he was like right in front of me the whole time. And it'd be like, all right, drop off this cargo. And then it's like, you walk outside and there's a motorcycle there from the God Lord. And you're like,
right.
Thanks, and man.
I'm torn.
That's awesome.
I think it's a great system. I also think, I don't think it's a new genre. That's,
Animal Crossing.
Exactly. But I also think
the
that
first sort, strand game.
That also kind of removes some of the sort of like fear and accomplishment that comes with traversal and hiking and exploration. It's a tough balance for sure. Like I don't want to see this game reach a point where it's like you load it up for the first time as somebody like Johnny just bought it from GameStop, brings it home, and all of a sudden there's like every river has 10,000 bridges and ladders and all this stuff.
Well, it won't.
Until you gain access to equipment.
Yeah.
You don't see stuff unless you have it. Unless you can build it, you don't see it. And Timefall washes it all away.
Yep.
If you build a bridge or you put a ladder or whatever, you will eventually get notifications that says your stuff is gone because of Timefall.
Right.
And so it's like, it's kind of weird that like, it, exactly, like, is it eventually going to be this thing where it's like, I'm never going to have to do anything. There's roads everywhere. And it's like, no, because the game will eventually just kind of like wash itself clean for new people, you know?
Yeah. We don't know what this game looks like when everyone's playing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is going to be,
it's a small sample size.
Dying to jump into this world when the game is out.
Me too. Yeah.
Like, I think that I kind of got the weird short end of the stick by playing it early, which is incredibly exciting, but also being like, oh, it's much like the setting. It is a barren wasteland. It is not, it is unforged territory. There have not been trails blazed here.
When you feel like everyone who's like, it's like a reviewer, you know, they work for media, they're all doing the same thing I'm doing, which is like rushing through it. Where it's like somebody, you know, a year from now is going to spend the time being like, I'm going to make Capital Knot. I'm going to connect it to the way station. And this is, they're going to spend hours just like making these perfect paths.
And that won't appear, all of that stuff won't appear in one person's game versus another. It'll be variable depending on
like
how the
instance,
game works. It's interesting there. And like, I've had moments where there was a generator right there and I needed a recharge on my bike. And it literally was 10 feet away from that generator.
Oh, no.
And I just could not get there. But, like, luckily I was able to make another. But you run into those moments where it is, there is no, like, perfect place always to build a thing. There are usually very great places, but
I always built stuff where I'm like that. I really need a generator right here.
Yeah.
Other people probably do too.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden I would see, like, likes coming out of nowhere. And I'm like, they're like, we really like the generator you put here in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
If I'm there, there's a good chance other people are going to need to go there.
That is the thing about that system that I like the most is how positive it is. Like, it is an optimistic, positive system, even if it is based around a social media idea where social media can also be awful.
Oh, this is the most optimistic post-apocalyptic game we've seen.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many games that are like, what will you do in this wasteland where there are no rules and there are zombies and big bugs and, oh, no, what will happen? But it's like, in this case, it's like, no, you're going to try to reconnect things and build stuff. Like, this is rebuilding.
Right.
Which is also, like, a wonderful allegory for Kojima starting a new studio.
Yep.
This is starting and fresh.
You,
and
if you want to dig into it, I think on the flip side, there's something sort of inherently toxic and perverse and gross about taking this gorgeously drab, minimalist, untouched landscape and covering it with robotic bullshit.
Oh, it's weird. You
know, like, something interesting. There's a conversation there too, right? Like, taking a beautiful river and putting idiot robot bridges over it that have Facebook thumbs up all over it.
It's terraforming.
Inherently gross. Yeah.
You are terraforming America.
Yeah.
But also, the my favorite irony is this is a game about reconnecting with people and learning how to, you know, bridge differences and gaps, and we are still on Twitter arguing about review scores.
Yeah.
Like, whoosh.
Yeah.
Big whoosh. I really do like this game. I'm torn about it. I think it really feels like the most, like, just manically ambitious thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
It is probably the most surreal AAA game since the last Mario game. Like, it's very strange.
Yeah.
It comes out so hard.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I mean, it's it's not Metal Gear.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was a series that I was attached to, and I had a lot of investment in those characters, in spite of when it was often nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want to see what happens to Snake. You want to find out what's going on with Big Boss. Like, what is that Psycho Mantis's uncle? Who knows? And this time, it's like a brand new cast of characters who are kind of like sort of placeholders for some of those roles, but at the same time, they're all brand new characters, and they all come out just chewing scenery and acting their asses off, but I don't have any reason to like them yet.
Yeah.
The first Metal Gear is a very small game, and it builds up gradually from that.
Yeah.
So for this game to drop, to be this massive, huge, epic, sprawling experience that has all these characters with all this stuff to say, but like, it's kind of like a sort of a weird first impression.
Yeah, It is a game like filled with internal conflicts in the way it's designed, in the way it presents itself, in the good and the bad of it. And I think that's why, for me, Tristan's review, even if I disagree with some of his feelings on it, I think why he's able to nail so much of how complex this game is. Like, we often want to put games into it is a good game, it is a bad game slot. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a game that is, if you want to do that, it's extremely reductive. And there's so many bits of minutia that you can say that works, that doesn't work, that does, that really, really doesn't. And I love that that conversation is happening. And like Max, you said, I can't wait for more people to actually play this because it will affect how the game is. It will affect how we might be able to experience this game. And I'm fascinated to see that.
Go for it. I was just going to say, like, to go off that is like, it, this is definitely one of those games where it's just like people are, you know, people here have asked me, this game's just a little bit of backstory for when we first got the game. I was on a work trip and my plan was to come home and then work from home the rest of the week, just playing the game. So what was weird was I was gone and you all started playing, you know, that day, like we had like a Slack channel for this. And I was like, ooh, this is a little like not spoilery, but you know, I kind of didn't want to see anything. So I was instantly behind because I didn't get to play it for the first 2 days. And then I just like brewed some coffee and played the game for 5 days straight. And my wife came home, who also works here, right? Who also works here. And she's like, hey, so do you like it? And I was like, I think so. I'm pretty sure I do, whatever. And I was like, why? What are people in the office saying? And she's like, well, this person didn't super like it. And this, but it became this thing where it's like, people are going to ask, like, is Death Stranding good or bad? And Leaf Johnson on Twitter said, it's Death Stranding. You know what I mean? Like, is it good or bad? I don't know.
It's art, man.
But are you going to like it? That's different. And that's why I said, like, if you come up to me and you say, do you know, am I going to like Death Stranding? I'm going to have to, what kind of games do you like? Because I don't think it's bad, but maybe it's not a masterpiece either. But your idea of whether you like it or not is really going to be dependent on what you find enjoyable in a video game.
Absolutely. The way I've been sort of trying to distill this for the sort of hardcore PlayStation fan or even casual one is that God of War, Spider-Man, these are games I can recommend to any gamer on Earth.
Yeah.
Bloodborne, less so. Like, I think everyone should, like, stick a toe in that pond and die and get it cut off.
But it's easy. You get to say, do you like hard games?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Death Stranding is not a video game I would recommend to the average gamer. It's not the video game I would recommend to the average PlayStation gamer. It is a, like, twee, bloated, nonsensical indie game on a AAA budget. It is.
Yeah.
And that's rare. That's few and far between. And in many ways, I'm torn because I'm like, support that. Get art out there. On the other side, I'm like, it's tedious and cumbersome and boring in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of it is rote and awful. But I do think a lot of it is like sort of interesting and fascinating. And when it clicked, I was like, yeah, let's keep going. Let's keep doing this. And then something made me go, just leave it where it is. I put like 30 hours in and I walked away. But I'm glad it exists, but I would not recommend it to most people.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what artists do after they did the thing that made everyone give a shit. Mm-hmm. You know, when they suddenly get like a blank check and carte blanche to do whatever. And I've compared Death Stranding to the movie Sorcerer, which is what William Friedkin did. Like, I think it was either after French Connection or The Exorcist, but either way, he had like earned enough goodwill to be able to be like, yeah, you can do whatever, man. You can go nuts. And he made a movie that was like a weirdly divisive critical thing that was a commercial flop and nobody knew what to make of it, but it's really cool.
Right.
And there's plenty of things out there like that. The guy who directed It Follows made Under the Silver Lake, which is an incredibly strange, weird, meandering, probably overly long, kind of up its own ass movie, but it's interesting. And I love that. I love seeing what artists do when they kind of come out swinging and they're just like, I don't know. Where do I start? What do I do next?
Yep.
Like, the blank canvas is a terrifying thing.
Jackie Brown as well, right?
Exactly.
Where it's like, they told Tarantino sort of like, be a director. Like, focus less on the script and more on characterization and get people in there.
It's like, I'll take this Elmer Leonard book that nobody but me has read.
Some people thrive under the pressure of like a massive studio, you know, the dirt becomes diamonds and whatnot. Other people flail, and it remains to be seen where Kojima will land in the spectrum of all of this. But I do think it is really cool to see someone go, this is what I want to make, and either a bunch of people being like, we're yes men and cheering him on, or other people being like, sure, like, I think that'll do okay. I'm glad that exists. I do think that's going to be a rarity in this medium for a very long time. Indie games, like aforementioned, have been doing it for decades now, so stick with those if you this want is, weird stories.
This has some indie game DNA in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is either like the hardest version of Proteus or the easiest version of Quap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And especially, I think those first few hours, as we were kind of saying, will be a good like benchmark indicator of whether or not you're going to want to continue with this. Like, I would recommend if you pick it up and get through, you know, an hour, that's probably mostly cutscene, get to the first little drip of a new thing and see where that takes you. But obviously, if you want a lot more on this game, we're going to be talking about it, I think, a lot, especially as more people play it here, more people out there start playing it when it comes out on November 8th. But in the meantime, definitely please check out Tristan's full review. It's on IGN.com. It's on YouTube.com/IGN. And he eloquently makes his case for why he believes the game is what it is. And I think it's an excellent review.
Check out numerous reviews.
Yeah.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's... people like different things. This is a weird game.
Yeah, and
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's a really exciting conversation to have wherever people fall on the spectrum of it, and whether that's divisive or not, I think that's interesting and fascinating to talk about. So, of course, we'll be doing that a lot more here on Podcast Beyond. So please tune into the show normally every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. You can yell at all of us on Twitter if you want to.
Death Stranding!
Brian is at Agent Bizzle. Right. I am at JM Dornbush. Max is at Max Scoville. And Mark is at Mark_Medina.
Yep.
Thank you so much for watching and listening to the show. And as always, Beyond.
Death Stranding.
Beyond. Death Stranding.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.